International.
Ici Radio-Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with us, the first new show after our little vacation. We hope you enjoyed the special programs that we brought you over the past 3 weeks. As we were preparing today's program, we had some very sad news. BBC journalist Sue Lloyd-Roberts passed away from a rare cancer of the blood. To find out a little bit more about her career, we have this report from Caroline Hawley from the BBC.
This was Sue Lloyd-Roberts doing what she did best. She'd sneaked through Syrian army lines to enter the besieged city of Homs in 2011.
My guide equipped me with a fake local ID to get us past checkpoints and told me to pretend to be his deaf-mute sister, which suited me fine.
Sue Lloyd-Roberts, who began her career at ITN before joining the BBC, was an adventurer who specialised in getting into difficult places and uncovering abuses of human rights by repressive regimes. In 1994, she filmed this report on the human organ trade in China, describing prisoners killed to order for the body parts they could supply. Her report infuriated the Chinese authorities, and she was sentenced in absentia to 7 years in jail.
It's believed hundreds of foreigners are coming to China every year for their kidney transplants to hospitals like this in Canton that services the Hong Kong market, and that the number is increasing all the time.
The beginning or the end?
Sue Lloyd-Roberts went to extraordinary lengths to get stories here in 1997, posing as a clothes manufacturer to expose abuses in Burma's garment industry.
Less than $1 in Myanmar.
She reported regularly from the country over many years, covering the carefully controlled elections of 2010.
This time, the generals have organized the elections according to the new constitution to ensure, however people vote, they remain in control.
What's the matter with you?
The following year, Sue Lloyd-Roberts got into North Korea.
It's as if shopping for food is a state secret. Whenever I asked to go to the market, I got the same response.
There's no market here.
She managed to get under the skin of the most closed country in the world.
At school, children are taught to sing a song that tells them that they have nothing to envy in the outside world and that they are the happiest people on earth. For more than a week in North Korea, they invited us to indulge in the fantasy.
But this year, Sue Lloyd-Roberts became a story herself. Diagnosed with a rare form of blood cancer, she decided to go public. She recorded a personal video diary to attract stem cell donors, not just for herself, but for others who need them too.
I'm getting very good at reading my blood counts now. It's funny how I knew nothing about hematology 4 months ago, and now I reckon I'm a bit of an amateur expert.
During a remission in her illness, Sue Lloyd-Roberts was back at work, reporting on the plight of Yazidi women and girls, taken as captives by ISIS fighters.
The three girls are very beautiful, with an aura of sadness about them, despite their age, and a kind of deadness in their eyes, which isn't surprising when they start telling you what happened to them.
Sue Lloyd-Roberts was a campaigning journalist who'll be remembered for finding unique ways of telling stories of human suffering that might otherwise not have been told.
The BBC's Caroline Hawley reporting on the career of BBC journalist Sue Lloyd-Roberts, who passed away this week from a rare blood cancer. The BBC's general director, Tony Hall, had this to say about Sue Lloyd-Roberts.
She went into places using what the rest of us, the rest of the world, would use. Hi-8 cameras, as we called them then, just normal tourist cameras. posing as somebody that she was not. And she was, in that sense, a sort of Miss Marple figure, really. She would go into all sorts of difficult places as a bird watcher or a historian. And with, I mean, a real sense of courage, I have to say. I mean, she astounded me every time she would, you know, come back and tell me where she'd been and how she got in there. Real courage at getting to stories that nobody else would get to. Because she'd go to these difficult places, she might get a soldier to take pictures of her, you know, and she would brazen all this out and come back with coverage of all sorts of issues from, you know, I remember Nepal or Tibet or wherever it happened to be, and tell us things that we otherwise wouldn't know. She was immensely brave, immensely courageous, and brought to the world all sorts of stories that without her courage we would not have got.
The BBC General Director, Tony Hall, speaking about Sue Lloyd-Roberts. Roberts decided to go public about her illness and even recorded a video blog about very personal details on what it was like living with this illness. In some of the video blogs, she was very in very good spirits. In others, very low. She thought that would probably be a way to help people that are dealing with the same thing. Let's now listen to a few excerpts from these video blogs that she'd prepared.
They say it's going to be the hottest week in July since records began, which would normally be a cause of joy or rejoicing. I love warm weather. But when you're a cancer sufferer, it's quite tricky. I lost my hair during my first chemo treatment 4 months ago, and I have no problem with my wig. I love my wig. Some of my girlfriends tell me cruelly that it's better than the original. But when the temperatures go over 30, it gets really hot and prickly. And then I always have to wear a cardigan or something over my arms because I have something called a pit line here. Basically, it's a lead that goes into my arm, up my arm, and outlet somewhere near the heart. So there's a permanent fixture here so that the nurses can always take blood out of me for blood tests. And it's where the chemo goes in. But it means that it's quite ugly looking, and it means I prefer to be covered up. So all in all, it could be quite an uncomfortable week. I'm working again. BBC's Newsnight has been kind enough to give me a commission to interview three young women from the Yazidi community. The Yazidis are an ethnic minority who live in northern Iraq who are being currently persecuted by Islamic State, the IS. I met with the three young women a few days ago to hear their stories before recording them. They're appalling stories of how they were removed from their houses, how in some cases their fathers and their brothers were murdered, and they were taken off to be used and abused, that is, raped by IS soldiers and their commanders. One 20-year-old told me how she had to watch as her 13-year-old sister was raped by one of the soldiers. I was so engrossed in their appalling and horrific stories that I've got to admit that for the first time since I was diagnosed 6 months ago, I completely forgot about myself. It really put my problems into perspective. There are people out there suffering much more than I am. I've just had some wonderful news. I've got a donor and I've got a date for my transplant. We were filming in Westminster Abbey, I don't know if there's any connection, when I felt a ping on my phone, and it was from the hospital, telling me that the donor has been found, the match is correct, and he or she has agreed to a transplant in about 20 days' time. That is, agreed to give the stem cells, and my transplant will take place in 20 days' time. I don't know whether it's a result of the BBC appeal or whether the name came up in just a routine search and the match was found, because there's a huge secrecy surrounding the whole donor business. The donor isn't allowed to know the recipient isn't allowed to know the donor. I'll certainly write a thank you letter to him or her. I owe them a lot, but I'm not allowed to have any personal connection, but I love him dearly. And I'm really excited. This is such a load off my mind. I've got a donor, I've got a date, and I'm on my way. Well, I got the news of the donor yesterday, and I'm back here in the hospital for my weekly blood test. The euphoria has worn off a little bit because I've been in this situation 2 months ago. I had a donor and a date to go into hospital for my transplant, and then the donor failed his medical at the last moment, so everything was cancelled, which is why we had to start all over again. But my doctors did tell me that this is very unusual. It happens about once a year, and I was very unlucky. So I'm still pretty confident that in about 3 weeks' time, I'll be back in hospital for that transplant.
BBC journalist Sue Lloyd-Roberts, who passed away at age 64 in London on October the 13th. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corey 105, which is Peter 222 Journal.
Speed 220, Corey 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
And you are listening, of course, to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. As you're probably aware, from time to time, if there's a new receiver that comes out, we do like to talk about it and give a little bit of a review. During the course of the program, we've only ever reviewed one DRM receiver, and that was the Neustar DR111. As you know, as well as Victor Gunatelica, who joined us on that program, were less than excited about its performance. Well, now, guess what? There is now another new DRM receiver on the market. It's a radio that is made in India. As you're probably aware, All India Radio has been expending a great deal of money to convert many of its transmitter sites over to DRM. And you kind of have to wonder, why? Because there's been a lot of discussion within different departments in Indian government saying that, well, maybe we should just move to FM. So we'll have to see what happens with that. But a company in India has put out a new DRM receiver for the Indian market to target those who are interested in taking advantage of this new technology. Now, it's a little bit odd to begin with because we reported about 2 years ago, I believe, or maybe even less than that, I think it was a year and a half, there was a tender from All India Radio to find a manufacturer who could manufacture a bunch of these radios, most of which went to staff at All India Radio. But anyway, the radio is now here, and we managed to get a hold of one. Now, there's a few things that I want to point out first. I do love DRM technology. I have said this time and time again. It is a great technology. When it was introduced in the late 1990s, many people thought it would be the savior for shortwave broadcasting. And it looked like it would be. But unfortunately, the way it's turned out is quite the opposite. There are very few international broadcasters that decided to even go completely to DRM. And the ones that do broadcast large bulk hours, for example, Radio New Zealand International, mainly use it as a form of distribution for their FM relays in the Pacific. The BBC World Service and others do have DRM broadcasts, but how many people actually listen to them? Well, that's another story, because there's no receivers available. There are those who do have computer software that can convert the signal into audio, but that is not for the regular listener. All right, so I think I made my point. I do love DRM, Digital Radio Mondial. It does sound fantastic when it's engineered right. Now, let's get back to this radio made by Avion. Now, Avion makes many other things, LED color TVs and radios and speakers and other things as well. But they've come out with this new DRM receiver. Now, one of the big criticisms that DRM has had is that since the beginning, every receiver that has come out on the market has been rather expensive. And for the kind of radio you get, some people would say even too expensive. Now, India is a developing country, and this radio was introduced to the Indian market at, listen to this, $175. And they're saying that it's an affordable radio. Not for the Indian market, not for any market in Southeast Asia, except for maybe Singapore, but they're not interested in DRM. For the countries that, of course, this would matter, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, $175 is a lot of money. So who are they planning to target exactly? Well, I'm not sure on that one. Now, the Neustar DR111 sells for $145, which is also rather expensive. If a DRM radio is on the market and really does want to have some type of impact, first, they need two things. There have to be enough broadcasters using DRM and enough content available to listen to. And second, and most importantly, the radio has to be affordable. $175 is not affordable. Now, we got hold of one of these radios 5 weeks ago, and I've had a chance to play around with it. I even brought it with me to Europe to listen to some DRM broadcasts from the BBC and other broadcasters as well. And I have to say, or rather I should say, I'm sad to report, I wasn't impressed. For $175, the sound is not great. The screen on the radio, I have to say, is actually rather nice. It's in color and does give a lot more details than, let's say, the Neustar DR111. But are people really interested? Because the content that the DRM signal is putting out is something that any Indian who has a mobile phone can already access. So it's providing something that's almost already there. Now, the radio itself has, like I said, a nice LCD screen. The speakers, on the other hand, well, are rather appalling. My Texan PL660, PL880, PL380, and my Sanjen ATS909X, and the other shortwave radios that I have, even ones that are maybe around $30 or $40, have better sound with one speaker than this does with two. Now, of course, as we know, All India Radio does have problems with its audio. So what's the point of putting stereo speakers when All India Radio, especially their external service, do have appalling DRM quality? It sounds almost like telephone quality and is not taking full advantage of the technology itself. So that's one thing there. But even when you're listening to FM on it, it also sounds kind of, you know, not great. Really not great. It does have a headphone jack. And, well, you'd expect the headphones to also maybe sound better. Well, they do. But not like what I was expecting. On a scale from 1 to 5, if I had to put the headphone quality of good headphones plugged into the radio, I would probably be like 2.5. Now, it does cover the full shortwave spectrum of 2.3 megahertz all the way to 27 megahertz. The FM dial is from 87.5 to 108, and medium wave from 522 to 1720. But that doesn't matter at all, really, because the sensitivity of the radio is also not great. Software-driven shortwave radios, I have to be honest, I haven't been totally impressed by. I found that the reception quality was not exactly that good. And I would like to say to you right now, let's take a listen to a clip. Well, actually, no, let's do that. Let's take a listen to a DRM clip that I recorded of the BBC when I was in Europe. And let's take a listen to how it sounds. Do you hear anything? Sounds great, doesn't it? Well, as you probably are aware, there is, of course, no sound. And that's because the radio wasn't even sensitive enough to pick up the BBC's Daventry DRM relay. My Texan radio, on the other hand, had the signal meter going right to the end with the DRM sound. But this radio couldn't even do that. And that was in the same location in Stuttgart, Germany. So, another receiver, of course, that also had reception problems was the Neustar DR111. Medium wave reception, not that great. FM is actually not bad. Even the DR111 performed rather well on FM. But this is a DRM receiver, so it should be sensitive enough to pick up a good, decent DRM signal. Because one of the selling points that DRM has been saying for the past few years is that you can use less power. Well, that is true, but unlike an analog radio, even if the signal is weak, you can still get audio. But with DRM, if the signal is not strong enough and the receiver can't pull in a strong enough signal, it cuts out like a mobile phone. So you actually, in reality, probably need to use the same amount of power for the same area. The radio does have a DRM journal line, scrolling text. You can record programs. It has an auto scan, manual tuning. It has the DRM emergency warning, which they tested out a while ago. You can program 100 stations, and you can also play photos and music from an SD card that you slide into the radio. It also has a removable remote control. This all sounds nice. But $175 for its performance, I'm still not impressed. The next thing, and of course this is something that I do talk about when I do talk about receivers, is design. Now, I'm not saying that it has to look as aesthetic as an iPhone or an iPad, but more effort could have gone into it. Now, when I got the radio and took it out of the box, actually I was rather excited to see if it was a better quality build than the Neustar DR111. Well, that didn't last long, because the build quality, it seems cheap. The radio does not look like it cost $175. The feel of the materials used, the way even the volume knob reacts, doesn't seem like a radio that's $175. And like I said, the design is horrible. Something that I have been going on at length for a very long time is we live in a different world than we did 30 years ago. Today, for example, if we take Apple and the iPhone, right? And let's say they designed an ugly smartphone. Well, yeah, some people would buy it, but part of the market is because it does look aesthetically beautiful. The curves on it, the lines on it, it's like a car. You know, it is just like a car. A Mercedes-Benz or BMW or any of these. Because you're paying the price. If you're going to pay $175 for this receiver, more effort and time should have gone into it. The handle for the radio also seems rather flimsy. So, that is my little review. I wish that I can play some audio, but unfortunately, even though my analog receivers were picking up a very strong DRM signal, this one wasn't. This one will go on the shelf next to the only working Neustar DR11. The only working because, as you're aware, we actually bought three, and one is only working now. So, will this radio last? How long will it be on the market, you may ask? Well, Amazon is selling it, but it currently says, currently unavailable. So I suppose we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, and if it even does make a comeback. But as I said earlier, in India right now, many government ministers and many different Indian government departments are discussing the fact that maybe they should just switch over to FM and just drop DRM. All right, there we go. I'm sure if there's further developments, we'll bring it to you here on the program. Well, for 2 weeks, we didn't bring you propagation because we've been away and we had some pre-recorded programs. But Glenn Hauser is back to take a look at what's been happening with propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. So, Glenn, over to you.
Keith from IPS in Australia. Slight relative improvements in HF conditions may be possible on October 17th. From normal at low latitudes to fair at mid latitudes to poor at high latitudes. Space Weather South Africa calls for magnetic conditions to be in minor storms through October 17th, shortwave fade outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, space weather forecast summary through October 18th. Another coronal hole facing Earth is expected to perpetuate the enhanced solar winds we've been seeing over the last week or so. Further, unsettled geomagnetic periods with a planetary K index of 3 are likely with a 50% chance of isolated G1 minor storm periods on October 16th, reducing to 40% on the 17th and 18th. From Space Weather Canada, the highest DRX index in the auroral zone is forecast at 127 on October 17th. FK Yanda in Prague says the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on October 16th, 17th, 20th, 30th, and November 1st. Mostly quiet October 18th, 19th, 21st, and 27th. Quiet to unsettled October 22nd, 25th, 28th, 29th, and 31st. Quiet on October 23rd, 24th, and 26th. Active to disturbed November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field likely to be at active levels on October 17th, 29th, and November 4th and 5th, with ANK indices of 15 and 4 or 12 and 4. G1 minor geomagnetic storm levels on November 3rd, with ANK indices of 20 and 5. Quietest period of 5 and 2 will be October 23rd to 27th. Solar flux rising from 110 October 18th to a peak of 130 on the 27th and down to 80 by November 2nd. Bill Hepburn's VHF UHF microwave DX forecast calls for extreme tropospheric ducting over the eastern Mediterranean and the coasts of Namibia and Angola on October 17th and 18th, the central Mediterranean October 19th and 20th, and all week around the Red Sea and along northwestern Australia.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Pellon, wishing you well. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you again very soon. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
This is Media Network Plus.